Thanks for tuning in to The Sun Also Rises here on KPCG 101.3 FM. I'm your host, Jeremiah Jacques, and I'd like to start off today talking about Peter the Great. But when he was born, he was not the great. That title wouldn't be bestowed upon him until near the end of his life. When he was born, in 1672, he was just Peter. Peter Alexeyevich Romanov. And he was one of several sons of Alexis I, the Tsar of Russia. But since Tsar Alexis had a couple of sons older than Peter, it never looked likely that he would take the throne, much less become a great. And sure enough, when Alexis died, Peter's older brother, a guy who came to be called Fyodor III, became Tsar of Russia. That was 1676, and Peter was just 4 years old at this time, a tragically young age for him to have lost his father. But Fyodor III assumed the throne, and even though Fyodor was disabled from a childhood disease, half paralyzed and horribly disfigured, he still had a reasonably strong intellect, and under his rule, everything was going well for a time. Or as well as could be expected anyway for medieval Russia. But then Fyodor III made a mistake. Well, two mistakes, really. First, he failed to produce any sons or daughters. That may have been because of the childhood disease that took such a toll on his body. But whatever the cause, not having any children is always an ill-advised course of action for a hereditary ruler. So that was Fyodor's first mistake, and his second was that he died with neither of his surviving brothers in a good position to take over. His next oldest brother, Ivan, was in terrible health, far worse than Fyodor's had been. And unlike the situation with Fyodor, Ivan's afflictions did affect his intellect. He was infirm in body and in mind, according to Walter Kelly's book, The History of Russia from the Earliest Period to the Crimean War. And Kelly points out that Ivan was sometimes described as being in a state of, quote, perpetual infancy. So Ivan was not a good pick to take over after Fyodor III's death. And then Fyodor's other brother was Peter. Peter was actually his half-brother, since they had different mothers. But in either case, Peter was not in poor health like his brothers. He was actually robust and energetic by temperament, but the trouble with Peter was that he was very young. He was only 9 years old at the time of his brother Fyodor's death, so neither Ivan nor Peter were great picks to be the next Tsar. And there was a great deal of discussion and debate in the Moscow court as to what should be done. And before long, two clear sides emerged in this argument. One side was a group that came to be called the Miloslavsky faction. These were named after the first wife of Tsar Alexis, a woman named Maria Miloslavsky. She had been the first wife of the Tsar and the mother of both Fyodor III and Ivan. She was also the mother of several princesses, the oldest of whom was Princess Sophia. Keep that name in mind because we'll hear a lot more about her. Now, the Miloslavsky faction, as you would expect, they stood firmly with Miloslavsky's son, Ivan. They said, yes, Ivan has health problems and serious mental handicaps, but he's the next oldest brother, so he should be Tsar. One of the loudest voices among the Miloslavsky faction was that of Ivan's sister, Princess Sophia. She was an ambitious woman. And she actually didn't view Ivan's infirmities as a problem. She saw his condition as a plus, because she calculated that with Ivan on the throne, and with all of his physical and mental limitations, that she would be able to function as the true ruler, behind the scenes, the de facto ruler. That was something that Princess Sophia ardently coveted. She would have made a play directly for the throne herself, but at this time in the 1600s in Russia, daughters were not eligible to rule. They were excluded from succession, and there were actually some very extreme measures taken to keep them from complicating the questions of succession. I'll read a passage here from the book Peter the Great by Jacob Abbott that explains this. It says, "By the ancient laws and usages of the Muscovite monarchy, the daughters were excluded from the succession altogether. Indeed, not only were the daughters excluded themselves from the throne, but special precautions were taken to prevent their ever having sons to lay claim to it. They were forbidden to marry, and in order to make it impossible that they should ever violate this rule, they were all placed in convents before they arrived at a marriageable age, and were compelled to pass their lives there in seclusion." End quote. So this is an extreme level of caution that was taken by the Russian government to ensure that their princesses didn't have any sons. In these convents where they were locked away, they couldn't marry, that's obvious, but they also couldn't have a boyfriend on the sly, any kind of clandestine romance that might result in children. So this was a government that was just extremely worried about conflicts over the throne, and a government that went to stunning lengths to try to minimize those kinds of conflicts. And I think that it's heartbreaking to think about how many Russian women lived their lives locked away like this, having no partner to share life with. You know, these were wealthy women. They were literal princesses. And they had all the comforts money could buy. But people are created to naturally desire marital companionship in most cases, and usually children too. So this would have been brutal to have basic God-given desires, very natural desires, blocked by the government. But anyway, that was the situation in Russia at this time in the late 1600s. And Ivan's sister, Princess Sophia, knew that she herself would have basically no chance of becoming ruler of Russia. So instead, she pushed for her disabled brother Ivan to take the throne so that she could be the behind-the-scenes de facto ruler. So that was one side of the conflict after Fyodor III died, the Miloslavsky faction. They wanted Ivan to be the next czar. On the other side of the disagreement was a group that came to be called the Naryshkin faction. This group was named after a woman called Natalia Naryshkina, who had been Tsar Alexis's second wife. And she was also the mother of Peter. So it should not be surprising to learn that the Naryshkin faction, they were behind Peter. They wanted him to become Tsar after Fyodor III's death, even though Peter was only 9 years old. This group said, yes, Peter is young, but he's in good health and he has clarity of mind, unlike Ivan. And we will surround him with capable advisors to provide the experience that his years cannot yet supply, and he'll do fine. So those were the two sides, and it was quite a heated debate for several weeks, but the arguments in support of Ivan were very weak. This young man was in a state described as perpetual infancy, as I mentioned, so it was difficult to defend the idea of making him ruler of Russia. And then several weeks into the deliberations, Peter turned 10 years old, so he was at least in the double digits. And it seemed like the crown was going to be placed on Peter's head. But that's when Princess Sophia stepped in. She had been gaining more and more power in the court, even before Fyodor's death. She had been forming all kinds of secret alliances with various nobles and lawyers, and above all, with military officials, the palace guard. Hey. She understood the power of the guard, and she invested a lot into building partnerships with various high-ranking soldiers, mostly of this armed guard. And when it looked like Peter was going to be crowned, Princess Sophia began circulating a rumor among the soldiers that her brother Fyodor III had not actually died of natural causes. but that he had been poisoned. And she said that it was Peter's supporters, the Narishkin faction, who were behind that poisoning. As a result of this, the armed guards went on a murderous rampage, and they killed several of Peter's supporters, and many innocent people in Moscow were also slain as this rampage just spiraled out of control. But eventually, it was agreed that both Ivan and Peter would be proclaimed Tsar in conjunction, as co-Tsars. So it was a bit of a compromise, and it did result in Princess Sophia being the real power behind the throne for a time. But Princess Sophia wasn't content with this. She knew that her brother Ivan could die at any time, and that her half-brother Peter was only growing older and more capable with each passing month, so she feared that Peter would soon overpower her. And she decided to kill him before that could happen. So she gave orders to the guards to kill Peter and his mother. But somehow they were able to find out about the plan, and they ran away from the palace on foot. Peter was only 10 at this time, so this is very early in his co-reign. And Peter and his mother were able to make their way to the Monastery of the Trinity. The two of them made their way into the doors of this place just as these murderous guards caught them. And two of the guards actually made it inside after them before the church officials could close the doors. But Peter and his mother kept on running, and they made it to the foot of the altar. And I'll pick up the thread here from Jacob Abbott. He writes, "The soldiers pursued, brandishing their swords, and were apparently on the point of striking the fatal blow. But the sacredness of the place seemed to arrest them at the last moment, and after pausing an instant with their uplifted swords in their hands and uttering imprecations against their victims for having thus escaped them, they sullenly retired." End quote. So these would-be assassins felt like, since they were inside of this place of worship, surrounded by, you know, crosses and religious paintings, they felt like they couldn't murder this small boy and his mother. So Peter's life was saved. And then a few years later, Princess Sophia made another attempt on Peter's life, which also failed. And it was around this time that she decided to try a new method to get Peter out of her way. This is when Peter was about 16, and we can go once again to Jacob Abbott's book for the explanation. He writes, "Sophia's plan was to supply him with means of pleasure and indulgence very freely, thinking that a boy of his age would not have the good sense or the resolution to resist these temptations. Thus, she thought that his progress in study would be effectually impeded, and that perhaps he would undermine his health and destroy his constitution by eating and drinking or by other hurtful indulgences." So this was a deeply sinister plan, just monstrous. Princess Sophia decided, okay, my plans to kill my brother have failed, but hey, maybe I won't have to kill him. Maybe I can just kill his character, turn him into a soft boy, a glutton, an alcoholic, and a womanizer, and just a worthless man of no integrity and no real character. So Princess Sophia wanted to turn Peter into a lecher and a drunk, and she did follow through on this plan. Jacob Abbott continues, "The princess now made an arrangement for establishing Peter in a household of his own, at a palace situated in a small village at some distance from Moscow. And she appointed 50 boys to live with him as his playmates and amusers. These boys were provided with every possible means of indulgence and were subject to very little restraint. The intention of Sophia was that they should do just as they pleased, and she had no doubt that they would spend their time in such a manner that they would all grow up idle, vicious, and good for nothing. There was even some hope that Peter would impair his health to such an extent by excessive indulgences as to bring him to an early grave." End quote. So there it is. Peter was given his own palace outside of Moscow and left there with 50 other boys around his age and with no one there to tell him no. And these were Peter's teenage years, starting around age 16. Years when boys are naturally impetuous and rebellious. These are years when biology can cloud the mind and people are prone to live for the moment without much thought of the future. So this plan by Princess Sophia was brilliant, because I think that most teenage boys put in a situation like this, with all the money they wanted and with dozens of young friends there with you, every pleasure they could imagine was at their fingertips, and I think that most teenage boys would find it impossible not to live a life of instant gratification and hedonism, just pure devotion to pleasure. A great many teenage boys placed in a situation like this would use the money to buy endless alcohol and prostitutes and just spend their lives indulging. That's what Sophia thought Peter would do. That's what she wanted and expected him to do. She wanted to ruin him, kill his character. But Peter didn't fall into this trap. Instead, he turned the palace full of boys into a regimented military school. He hired several of the best teachers and military experts that money could buy, and he led those 50 boys to spend their days learning and working. Here's Jacob Abbott once again. Instead of giving up his studies and spending his time in indolence and vice, he caused the boys to be organized into a sort of military school. He caused himself to be taught to drum so as to enable him to understand and execute all the beats and signals used in camp and on the field of battle. He studied fortification and set the boys at work, himself among them, in constructing a battery in a regular and scientific manner. He learned the use of tools, too, practically, in a shop which had been provided for the boys as a place for play. And the wheelbarrow with which he worked in the making of the fortification was one which he had constructed with his own hands. And then skipping down a little here, it says, Peter knew that when he became a man, he would be emperor of all Russia. He did not expect, it is true, that he should ever be called upon to serve in any of his armies as an actual drummer, or to wheel earth and construct fortifications with his own hands, still less to make the wheelbarrows by which the work was to be done. But he was aware that he could superintend these things far more intelligently and successfully if he knew in detail precisely how everything ought to be done. And that was the reason why he took so much pains to learn himself how to do them. So Peter was mindful of the future that awaited him as Tsar of Russia. He was keenly aware of the immense responsibilities he would bear, and he wanted to be ready. So he turned this palace into a military academy. And as he and the boys grew older, he introduced higher and higher branches of military science into their education. Abbott says he, quote, contrived to improve and perfect the organization of it in every way. He established professors of different branches of military science as fast as he, himself, and his companions advanced in years and in power of appreciating studies more and more elevated. The result was that when at length Peter was 18 years of age and the time arrived for him to leave the place, the institution had become completely established as a well-organized and well-appointed military school, and it continued in successful operation as such for a long time afterward. And we have to remember that during these years at the palace, Peter didn't have parents around to instruct him and to warn him and to restrain him. His father had died several years before this, and the way Princess Sophia arranged his situation at this palace, Peter had very little contact with his mother. So he had basically only those 50 boys his age, who Sophia thought would be bad influences on him. It's truly remarkable that even without parental guidance, Peter did not fall into this trap of hedonism and lechery that his wicked sister set for him. She wanted to turn him into a soft boy, a soy boy, or a marshmallow man, you might say. But Peter resisted. And under his leadership, instead of becoming gluttons and lushes and libertines, these boys became men. They became knowledgeable, industrious, reliable men. Men who could be leaders of other men. They didn't know the true God by any means, but they became men who had considerable integrity by human standards. And as we read there, even after Peter got married at age 18 and left this palace, it remained an elite military academy for many years. Now, this story does not have a happy ending. Peter did become uncontested Tsar of Russia in 1696 when he was 24 years old, and he ruled for decades afterward, and he made some major accomplishments for his country. He transformed Russia from a relatively backward and isolated nation into a major European power. He introduced sweeping reforms to modernize the military, government, economy, and culture. And he painstakingly persuaded millions of Russians to adopt modern Western European technology, customs, and ideas. Peter also added a considerable amount to Russia's territory, expanding the empire. And he built the country's first real navy. He also built the mighty city of St. Petersburg, even while Russia's war with Sweden was still raging. This secured Russia's foothold on the Baltic and created what came to be called the Window to Europe. It gave Russia access to the Baltic Sea and from there to the world. So Peter accomplished a great deal as Tsar, and those are among the things that earned him the title Peter the Great. But he also became a cruel man. He was openly unfaithful to his first wife, and when she dared to confront him about it, he had her confined to a convent for the rest of her life. And when he built the city of St. Petersburg, he did so at the cost of as many as 100,000 forced laborers and serfs, Russian men who died trying to do the impossible work of converting a frigid marsh into a magnificent port city. These men died of disease, exposure, exhaustion, and accidents of all kinds in these abysmal circumstances, but Peter didn't seem to care at all. And then worst of all, Peter would routinely use torture against those who plotted to overthrow him, or who he thought were plotting against him. He used torture as an instrument of state security and criminal investigation against many rebels and political enemies. Even Peter's own son, Alexei Petrovich, died as a result of being tortured during a treason investigation that Peter authorized. So Peter's legacy is mixed at best, and in light of his ruthlessness and cruelty, I think a case could be made for remembering him not as Peter the Great, but as Peter the Terrible. But even still, the character that he exhibited as a teenager, resisting temptation and choosing to do hard things, character-building things, choosing education and self-improvement when it would have been so easy, so natural to choose pleasure and excess, that is an inspiring example. An example of a young person who did not fall for the trap that his sister set, but who instead worked to make himself a capable, educated, and upright man. And he worked to make those 50 boys with him also capable, educated, and upright. We see, of course, from later in his life that it was ultimately not successful for Peter's long-term personal character. But nevertheless, that decision that he made when he was young, that was noble, and it did establish some real integrity that no doubt played a huge role in all the accomplishments that Peter made as Tsar. That decision that Peter made when he was young brings to mind Psalm 34, where David writes, "Depart from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it." And how different things might have been for Peter if he had continued to exhibit that kind of character in his later years. Well, thanks very much for tuning in to The Sun Also Rises on KPCG FM. Please send any questions or comments you may have to tsar@kpcg.fm. And if you'd like to know more about departing from evil and becoming an upright person of true integrity, far beyond anything that Peter and his friends ever achieved, I hope you'll order your free copy of our book, Biblical Manhood. To get your free copy, you just need to go to thetrumpet.com. Click on the Literature tab, and you can order your free copy of Biblical Manhood right there. Thank you again, and I'll leave you with one last passage from the historian Jacob Abbott. Himself half-savage, Peter undertook to civilize 20 million people, and he pursued the work during his whole lifetime through dangers, difficulties, and discouragements.